What's going on, everyone? We are live with the Noah Gilliam Show. So happy you decided to join in today. I am your host, Noah Gilliam. Welcome back. It is the 12th of September, 2022, and we are here today to recap the Eagles and Lions game that took place yesterday, as well as go over some more of our week one takeaways and reactions to a crazy opening week in the NFL. Before we get into that show, please hit that subscribe button if you're watching us on YouTube. If you're listening along on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please hit us with that follow, that subscription. If you're looking for us on social media, you can find us on Twitter at Noah Gilliam Show. You can find myself at Noah Gilliam. And if you're looking on Instagram, you can find us at The Noah Gilliam Show and myself at NoahGill1. So without further ado, let's get right into it. To start off the show today, we are going to be breaking down what we saw in Detroit yesterday, which was a 38-35 victory by the Philadelphia Eagles over the Detroit Lions. It was a very high-scoring game, obviously, by the final score, and there was plenty to like from an Eagles perspective, plenty to like as well from a Detroit perspective, and it was a really great game, especially to follow along with. My initial takeaways, however, were, you know, the offense looked really, really good. There was a lot of great, that they did in general, and you know, I can't say so much for the defense, and that's where we're really gonna start it off today. The defense as a whole got a lot of improvements this offseason. I mean, like, you added to every single level of that defense. You really made strides to improve a unit that was not that good last year. And, you know, there was a lot of excitement, a lot of skepticism as well for defensive coordinator Jonathan Gannon and whether or not, you know, his scheme last year was what was unsuccessful based off personnel, or if it was actually a scheme issue with, you know, what he decided to run. Yesterday, it appeared as if it was more of a scheme issue. You know, there was a lot of good plays made by the defense individually. Josh Sweat had a number of times where he was in the backfield on defense. James Bradbury obviously made his presence felt with a pick six. And, you know, even the rookies had some impact throughout the game. And that's actually where I wanted to start off the defensive breakdown a little bit, because I want to credit the guy here. I saw a great stat on Twitter today, Shane Half, at Half and Half underscore TPL on Twitter. He actually came out with this stat through Jordan Davis's snap on the field, first round rookie out of Georgia for the Eagles. The Eagles allowed 2.9 yards a carry with Jordan Davis on the field. So a very good number, limiting the opponent's rushing. When he wasn't on the field, however, it was up to 10 yards a carry, which is absolutely astronomical. Like, if you're giving up 10 yards a carry to anybody, let alone a team with explosive running backs like Detroit has, it's just not going to spell good news for your team. I mean, you just look at it with the overall numbers too. I mean, you give up 181 yards on the ground to a Detroit team. And, you know, a lot of people weren't expecting to be very prolific. However, they do have a very good offensive line. Like I said, very explosive running back. So there was a lot to like in terms of if you're looking at it from a Lions perspective. But you also expected, you know, when you go out and you get a Jordan Davis in the first round, like, you expect to utilize that guy, especially with a guy with not a lot of pass rushing acumen, didn't show a lot of pass rushing at Georgia. You know, one of the main things you brought him in for was to stop the run. So that's where, you know, that's where he was outsnapped by Tupelowu, if I'm saying that right. But you know, that's where you almost really need to see these guys get in there and be successful, because when they're in there, they're making an impact. And that's where Jonathan Gannon, I hopefully can go back and check out the film, check out how it's looking, and see that it was actually working when he was in there. I mean, Jordan Davis only played 22 snaps, 32% of the total snaps on defense there. So there's definitely a lot of room to grow. And I mean, I get it. I know they wanted to have Fletcher Cox on the field a lot. They had a good little rotation going as well. You know, Milton Williams along with Tui Pulatu and Davis, Hargrave, Cox, all of them got a lot of snaps. Nobody was over 60% of the snaps on the defensive line outside of Josh Sweat, specifically in the defensive tackle rotation. And it was just a really interesting thing to see, because I think as we kind of go through the season, you know, it's really tough to evaluate rookies in week one. Obviously, it's their first taste of regular season football. I mean, say what you want about the preseason, but they're not playing a full game and going, you know, balls to the wall for 60 minutes. You know what I mean? So I think that was a really interesting kind of storyline to take away from this game. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how it goes against Minnesota next week, because they're a team with a very prolific offense, as we saw last week. And, you know, when you got a guy like Dalvin Cook in the backfield of Minnesota, you know, they're going to utilize him a lot. They're going to utilize him in the run game, in the pass game, but specifically with a guy like Kirk Cousins, they're going to utilize that run game early and often to set up that play action game and to really get their passing game going. So if they can stuff the run early, I think that's going to be a big win for the Eagles, and it's going to make their passing a little bit more predictable, especially with the elite weapons that they have on the outside in Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen. But back to the game yesterday, you know, the secondary didn't look great. You know, Darius Slay had, you know, really, really good coverage on a DJ Chark touchdown down the right sideline toward the end of the game that, you know, brought them within three. So it was really, really tough there because, you know, Slay was playing pretty well. Slay also dropped an interception, so that was kind of a bummer. But overall, I mean, it wasn't that great of a performance from the defense. And this is where I just don't know if it's Jonathan Gannon or not. You know, he was one coach along with Jalen Hurts, who was probably the biggest question marks on the team this season coming into the year. And we'll get to Jalen Hurts in a few minutes, but Jonathan Gannon didn't really show a lot yesterday. Didn't really show like he had answers for a Detroit offense that, you know, outside of a guy in DeAndre Swift, who is very, very explosive, like, you know, Amon-Ra St. Brown, their wide receiver, who had a pretty good game for them. I mean, he had a lot of yards. He had 8 for 64 and a touchdown from Amon-Ra St. Brown. You know, it wasn't very, very great. I mean, granted, he held Jared Goff to about 215 yards through the air, 21 of 37. Goff ended up finishing attempts and completion-wise. But, like, it seemed like they were just moving the ball at will. And it really showed up on third down as well. And they were 9 for 14 on third down, was Detroit. And it just seemed like they didn't have any answers on third down to get them off the field. Seems like they didn't really have that big pass rush. Hassan Reddick wasn't really that involved. They tried to rush him up the middle a number of times, which was very unsuccessful. He dropped into coverage a couple times. So it's going to be interesting to see how his usage changes going into week two. But when you come down to it, you know, you expected a lot more. I think that's really what comes down to the bottom line. They ended up winning the game, so I don't want to be all doom and gloom for, you know, this Eagles and this Eagles defense. But when you give up 35 points, you know, that's, you know, something went wrong. And in this case, multiple things went wrong for an Eagles defense that had a lot of expectations coming into this year. Their linebacking core played pretty well. TJ Edwards looked all right. He had a great camp, and he was pretty much entrenched in that middle linebacker role. He looked all right. Kazir White made an impact early. He tipped James Bradbury's interception before Bradbury ended up coming up with the ball, so he was making numerous plays. He made a couple good plays in the run game, so he had a very good introduction to Eagles fans this week one, and I'm just interested to see how his role continues to grow, because he was a big part of everything that defense did well yesterday. And just growing off that, you know, we'll be interested to see with that linebacking core where Hassan Reddick starts to play more. When they do bring Jordan Davis in to play that nose tackle, does Hassan Reddick come back down to the line of scrimmage and start rushing the passer more? Because that's why you bring in a guy in Hassan Reddick and you give him $40 million, because you want him to rush the passer. So it's going to be really interesting to see where the usage starts to go for that linebacking crew. But I think just kind of bringing it back to a macro level with this defense, overall, I mean, they gave up 386 yards. So it's not like they gave up over 500 yards of offense or something ridiculous like that. But then again, they were situationally not the best. The red zone was very lucrative for the Lions when they got into the red zone, even though they got forced to a fourth down on the DeAndre Swift touchdown. They still ended up scoring a touchdown. The Jamal Williams touchdown in the first quarter, the first drive of the game, they stuff him and they don't wrap up. And he bounces off and just walks into the end zone for a touchdown. So these are little things that you got to start to clean up as you go through the season, because you stuff them on third down, like, you should be able to just wrap them up and take them down. Then make Dan Campbell make a tough call. Make him say, okay, you know, we're going to go for it, like you did later in the game, and then go from there. But when you got let a guy just bounce off you and walk in for a touchdown, you know, that's not the best call. So overall, I keep bringing it back to the macro level. Not the best, but then again, not the worst either. All right, bringing it to the offense now, and let's talk about Jalen Hurts. He is pretty much the biggest question mark, pretty much the biggest X factor for how far the Eagles can probably go this year, how far their ceiling goes. And honestly, he looked phenomenal yesterday. There was a lot of breakdowns in front of him with the offensive line, which you didn't really expect with one of the best offensive lines in the league, one of the best offensive line coaches in Jeff Stoutland. You figured that they would come in with a good game plan, and honestly, there was a lot of breakdowns. There was a lot of breakdowns up front, and credit to Jalen Hurts, because his athletic ability saved probably more than a handful of plays for the Eagles that looked like losses, that had free rushers just coming right down the middle, and he turned them into positive plays. And when you have that X factor at the quarterback position, it just changes everything. And it gives you a little bit more room for error, but then again, you can't rely on that, because there's going to be bigger and faster players starting to come on as the season goes on. Hurts isn't going to feel as fresh as he does in week one, and maybe he's a half a step slower come week 14 or 15 when you have that free rusher coming in. Maybe he can't get away in that little thing, and then it's a 10-yard sack as opposed to him slipping one guy and it's a 15-yard run. And that's what you love about Jalen Hurts, the ability to shake guys, free rushers, and pick up yards. There was a play, 3rd and 15, he scurries around and gets a first down. Like, those types of plays are only going to increase the ceiling for this Eagles offense. And the fact that he was able to show that early in week one was great. But the fact that he had to go to that was not encouraging if you're an Eagles fan, because you would hope that the offensive line would have been able to throw around Detroit a little bit, much like they did last season. Granted, it's a different group of guys. You know, they went out and they spent the second overall pick on a pass rusher. So, like, you know, you expected a little bit more of a even ball game than it was last year, where they just absolutely threw Detroit's defensive line around. But then again, you know, you expected the Eagles to still win those matchups, which they did not. So it was a very, very tough game for the Eagles offensive line. I think the film session today, tomorrow, is going to be colorful language-wise, if you will, and it's going to be interesting. I think it's going to be led by Jason Kelsey. You know, he even said multiple times in the preseason that, you know, even on a win, it's a lot easier to go back and look at film, because you ended up getting the W at the end of the day, and there's a little bit less stress on it. But I think he's going to be right on everybody, because I think it wasn't just a game plan issue. It was a lot of guys getting thrown around. I mean, Kelsey got thrown to the ground by a linebacker on one goal line carry. Granted, it was a little bit away from the play, but still, you know, you expect the Eagles offensive line to be those bullies and not kind of get thrown around like that. But bringing it back to Jalen Hurts a little bit, final numbers, he ended up 18 of 32 for 243 yards through the air, and then he had 17 carries for 90 yards and a touchdown. 17 carries is a lot of carries. Granted, he did have probably 4 or 5 designed runs, which ended up being good. He had the goal line carry, which he ended up punching through. He had another goal line carry, which he got stuffed with. He had a couple read options earlier in the game, but you talk about, that's probably 10 or more scrambles that, you know, are a big strength of his game, but you don't want your quarterback running it 17 times every week. And granted, he can look very good doing it. I mean, he had 90 yards and a touchdown. He was averaging 5.3 a carry, but you don't want to rely on that. Now, from a passing perspective, this is where all the, you know, the nitpicking is going to happen. This is where all the film study is going to happen with his arm. And, you know, he did only go 18 for 32, but watching that game, he looked very comfortable throwing the ball. A lot of his misses were almost seemed like miscommunications with the receivers. I know early, at least in the first drive, he had a play with Devontae Smith where it almost seemed like Devontae Smith may have thought it was like a run play, and Jalen Hurts threw the ball, it almost like hit Devontae in the shoulder, but he wasn't really looking, missed that, and then they went for it on fourth down, and it was just good, really good coverage, but a good ball placement to an A.J. Brown comeback route on a fourth down. So overall, the line didn't look great, only 243 yards, but I think overall he looked very good. That connection with A.J. Brown right away, it was obvious. I mean, A.J. Brown finished the day with 10 catches for 155 yards. Just an absolute beast. He tied a career high in receiving yardage with that mark of 155. And that's the guy who the Eagles wanted. That's the guy who they went out and prioritized in the offseason and traded for on draft day when you spend a first-round pick and a third-round pick to get him. That's what you're hoping for. A impact-type player. And this isn't any kind of slight to any other player on the Eagles team like Devontae Smith or anything like that. But like what Brown brings to the game is something that the Eagles haven't had for years. Years and years and years. I mean, Alshon Jeffrey, when he first got here, was probably that type of guy. But even he was not as explosive as A.J. Brown is. I mean, he catches a ball, and I almost thought a couple times he caught a slant, he was going to go. And it's just a little trip up that stops him. But, I mean, you saw that connection right away. And I just can't wait to see how it grows throughout the year. Because if, you know, granted, he's not going to have 10 for 155 every week, but he was just getting open so much. And even when he wasn't open, Hurts was trusting him. You know, the big play down the right side, I believe it was a 52-yard completion to A.J. Brown on a 3rd and 4, ran a fly route down the right side of the field, and was just tremendous ball placement. I mean, Brown kind of got around him, but the cornerback made up great ground and was kind of on his hip, and then that ball just fell right into the pocket. And that is the type of throw that Hurts needs to consistently hit, because there's going to be plays, especially come the end of the season in the playoffs, where they're just going to blitz everybody and go one-on-one on the outside, and you're going to have to hit a receiver that's covered with a nice throw in with pressure in your face. And, you know, so far, so good for Jalen Hurts. He A.J. Brown even came out after the game and he mentioned how, you know, that ball just fell right out of the sky. And it was just such a dime. Thought he was going to drag the guy into the end zone. I mean, he caught it for like 40 yards from the line of scrimmage and ended up dragging a guy 10 more yards. And just a physical specimen A.J. Brown is. But that brings us to, you know, some of the other weapons on offense. Devontae Smith without a catch in this game, you know, it was a little concerning. He just really didn't get any looks throughout the game. He had the one early that I mentioned that he wasn't really ready for. He had another one where he was held coming back to the ball. So he drew a pass interference and a first down. So that was a positive play for the Eagles offense. But wasn't very much involved. I was mentioning to some people yesterday that I do think coverage is going to start shifting towards A.J. Brown. They're going to start bringing some safety help toward that side. They might even start double teaming him. And then that's when Devontae's really going to thrive. Because they did play a lot of zone yesterday, but they also did really run a lot of man coverage. And I think they almost doubled up on Devontae and Dallas Goedert. It almost seems like that's where the coverages were, because A.J. Brown was running single coverage a lot of the game. So it was a little bit of a questionable game plan there. But as we kind of go throughout the season, I expect a lot more one-on-one coverage for Devontae Smith. And if you guys watched anything in the preseason, any of the clips that came out, I mean, he was absolutely unguardable in one-on-one situations. So I think now that A.J. Brown has made his presence felt, he has made himself known that, hey, I am the focal point of this offense. Now teams are going to start adjusting to that, and then that's going to start opening up Devontae Smith on the other side of the field to really eat. Because all he's got to do is break down one guy, and Hurts is going to find him, put the ball on the money, and he's just going to keep eating those 10, 15-yard chunks that, you know, 7, 8, 9-yard chunks moving the chain. That's Devontae Smith's game plan right there. His footwork is absolutely phenomenal. Just how smooth he breaks in and out of his routes. I think once he kind of gets a little bit less attention on him, it's going to be game over for opposing defense, because then you're not even going to know who to guard. And then, you know, forget even about the wide receivers. Then you got to worry about a guy in Dallas Goedert who is just a specimen. The Eagles haven't had these kind of weapons in a long, long time. And I just am so excited to see how they develop, because, you know, Jalen Hurts he's just going to have so much fun getting the ball to these guys. I mean, you get the ball to Dallas Goedert, and he's one of the biggest players on the field, and he's running just as fast as cornerbacks and safeties out there on the field. It's just outstanding. He ended up with 3 for 60. He had a couple of really nice plays on great play designs. One when they were on the opposite side of the field, they brought A.J. Brown in motion, and then they still had a receiver in the slot who kind of came in almost like on a rub route. and then they ran Dallas Goedert out to the flat, so they kind of had the whole offense flowing to the right, even the slot wide receiver on the left side, and then they just kind of snuck Dallas Goedert out, and it was a beautiful play design. He grabbed about 20 yards down the left sideline, and those are the types of plays where Dallas Goedert is going to absolutely eat, because Detroit almost even covered that pretty well, because even though Dallas got 15, 10 yards down the field uncovered, there were still about three guys that came over and tackled him. There's going to be points in this year when Goddard slips out, and it's going to be a one-on-one. And his physical traits, his speed, his power, his toughness, I think all that's really going to come out as the season goes on. So overall, we'll bring it back to a macro level for the offense. Very impressed. Very, very impressed. Detroit defense, not quite the best. In terms of, you know, limiting opposing points. I mean, they didn't have the greatest year last year. I mean, they're the number two pick in the draft for a reason. But great, great opening game for a lot of the guys. I'm interested to see what happens with Devontae Smith. Like I mentioned, I mean, not having a catch is a little bit concerning. But A.J. Brown, Dallas Goedert really made their presence felt. Jalen Hurts had a phenomenal game. Even though the numbers really weren't that good, I thought he played a really, really great game. He pretty much saved the offensive line and saved the offense on a numerous amount of drives that, you know, they may or may not have done with other quarterbacks. So I think that overall, it was a very, very good performance. I did want to touch on the running backs real quick, because this was kind of a story throughout camp. There was a lot of rumors this offseason. Should they go out? Should they trade for a guy? Should they go out? Should they trade for Kareem Hunt or something? Because they don't really have any other running backs right now. And Miles Sanders must have heard all that noise, because he looked explosive yesterday. He looked phenomenal. Actually scored a touchdown yesterday, which he failed to do all last year. Miles ended up with 13 carries for 96 yards and a touchdown for 7.4 a carry. Just looked so explosive. Sealed the game. Or almost sealed the game with that one, with the one run down the stretch where he kind of ran into the back of the line and bounced it out. And when he gets an open space, man, it's scary, because he can really fly. He finds the holes. It looks like he's a little bit more decisive this year. I think that's one thing that's kind of been a knock on Miles Sanders, at least early in his career. And this was one thing that always used to frustrate me with LeSean McCoy and, you know, Saquon Barkley. Even it's like, these guys that are so shifty, they're so elusive, they almost want to show it off every play, and like every time in the backfield they'll dance, they'll bounce to the outside. But it seemed Miles Sanders really was like, you know what, listen, I'm going north-south, I'm going using my speed, I'm going to use my toughness, and I'm going to pick up yards. And that's what he did. Looked phenomenal, looked explosive, and he was even chirping Sirianni on the sideline like, yeah, like give me the ball, I want the ball, I'm your guy. And Sirianni has said that all training camp. He's been, Miles is our guy. Miles is our lead dog. Yeah, we're going to use other guys. Yeah, we're going to use Kenneth Gainwell. Yeah, we're going to use Boston Scott. But Miles is our guy. And it just showed yesterday. It showed how much trust can give a player confidence. And Miles looked so confident on the field yesterday. He looked so decisive. And that's great to see. A guy in a contract year. I think he is really trying to prove some people wrong this year. And honestly, in week one, he did. I can't say I was without doubts. Obviously the hamstring injury is still an issue. He didn't leave this game, or it didn't really look like it hampered him at all. However, we all know how hamstring injuries go. They're very tough to, you know, keep down for an entire season, especially if one pops up during the preseason. So just kind of having that in the back pocket, we will have to keep an eye on it. But overall, week one, I mean, I'll give him an A. He had a great performance. You know, 96 yards, almost broke that century mark, and he scored a touchdown, had some good goal line carries, you know, all good for me. So back to that macro level that I was talking about on offense, really, really great performance. The Eagles had four different ball carriers score rushing touchdowns, which hadn't happened for the Eagles in 50 years. I believe the stat was when they showed that up on the broadcast. So, Glowing reviews for the offense. There's a lot of positives to take away from this game, a lot of negatives to take away, especially on the defensive side of the ball. But overall, great performance. Kind of talking about next week now, they do have Minnesota. Minnesota had a great game against the Packers this last weekend. I'm pull up the score real quick. They ended up winning 23-7. And really put their footprint on that game. Justin Jefferson absolutely went off. Justin Jefferson finished with 9 catches for 184 yards and 2 touchdowns. And most of that damage came in the first half, too. He was just running wide open on a Green Bay defense who a lot of people expected to be very, very good in carrying that Green Bay team. So, and they also have one of the best cornerbacks in the league in Jair Alexander, but it didn't matter because the scheme they're running now, it's different than they've been running in the last couple of years with Mike Zimmer. They bring in a new head coach and he's got a new offensive system and he's really moving Justin Jefferson around a lot this season. And I'm nervous to see what that kind of means. He got moved in the, I think he was the first receiver in a long time that had 90 receiving yards on the perimeter and 90 receiving yards out of the slot in the same game. Just shows you how versatile the guy is, but it's really going to put the Eagles cornerbacks to the test. Granted, Slay and Bradbury are very, very good in coverage, but it's really going to test Avante Maddox in the slot as well. They motioned Justin Jefferson a lot during that game, so we're really going to have to be disciplined in your zones, in your man-to-man coverage, in your communication on the back end of the defense. I think the linebackers are going to have to be able to play in space. There was a couple plays in the Packer game yesterday that Minnesota got Justin Jefferson lined up with an outside linebacker. And that's where Kazir White is really going to have to, you know, guard in space. I think they're going to try to target Hassan Reddick in space. And that's where you're really going to see this defense and where it can go. Because I'm interested to see the adjustments they're going to have to make. Because this is one of, you got Justin Jefferson. You're going to have Adam Thielen, who was quiet yesterday, but is a prolific wide receiver. You got a guy in Dalvin Cook, who's one of the elite running backs in the league. And you got an offensive line who's played together, who has played with Kirk Cousins for a long time, and is ready to attack at all time, all game. This is something that Adam Thielen came out after the game and said. He said, it's so much fun that we just didn't have to take our foot off the pedal. You know, we just were attacking the entire game. And, you know, granted, Mike Zimmer was a lot more conservative of a head coach, was more of a defensive guy, wanted to grind out wins. And even if they would go up, maybe would pull the reins in a little bit. But that doesn't look like their new system. They are going to go, go, go. And for a team in the Eagles who built a big lead yesterday against Detroit and ended up letting Detroit crawl back into the game, it's worrisome. From first look, the Eagles ended up opening at 2.5-point favorites at home. So, and for anyone that doesn't know, usually in sports betting, at least for the NFL, usually home field is worth about 3 points. So if you ever are looking at spreads and you see a team might be favored by 3 points, or if you see a team on the road favored by like 3 points, then that what that's really saying is on a neutral field, like if they're going to a Super Bowl and those teams are playing together, then if a road team's favored by 3, then that really what that's saying is, you know, this team is more probably closer to about 6 points better than the other team. So what the line's telling me, being that the Eagles are 2.5-point favorites, they're expecting this to be a very close game. They're probably, Vegas is probably valuing Minnesota as a little bit better of a team. But that's not to say that they are disrespecting the Eagles by any measure. This is a team in Minnesota who a lot of people really like. And the Eagles, you know, a lot of people really liked, especially in the offseason market, in the futures market. So it's going to be really interesting to see. I'll be interested to see where that line goes. It is a Monday night football game, primetime game. So we'll see how Kirk Cousins looks. I think he's going to look better than, you know, than he has in primetime just with this new offense and, you know, Justin Jefferson emerging as an elite wide receiver and all that, yada, yada, yada. But I think it's going to be a very, very interesting game, and we'll have more of that as the week goes on. But it is going to be an interesting game, and I absolutely can't wait. All right, now let's talk some more week one. It was an absolutely wild week one across the NFL. Tons of kickers that were missing kicks, tons of kickers that were making kicks late in the game. A lot of offenses exploding, some offenses not performing great, and we had a tie. A week one tie. So let's talk about some games here. I just kind of wanted to go over just some of the, you know, just some of the games real quick. We'll do some quick hitters and kind of just talk about each one as we go through. New Orleans Saints ended up getting a 1-point victory over the Atlanta Falcons. I was pretty critical of the Falcons on the preview show, and I expected them to pretty much get rolled here by the Saints. But I think this game is telling me more about the Saints that they might not be quite as explosive as we thought. James Winston even left this game for a little bit with an injury. I didn't see exactly the nature of the injury, but he ended up coming back and leading them to a comeback win. You know, they needed that field goal late in the game to get the win. And Michael Thomas had a great game for them as well. Alvin Kamara didn't really look great. So it's going to be interesting to see if this offense can be more explosive. But also that this defense, I was really high on this New Orleans Saints defense. And giving up 26 points to the Falcons and getting, you know, handled early. I mean, the Falcons were up 23-10 in the fourth quarter. And it required a big fourth quarter from the Saints to even squeak out this win. So it's going to be really interesting to continue to follow on New Orleans in their quest to, you know, get back to the playoffs and really be a good team there. Another game, the Chicago Bears and the San Francisco 49ers played in a monsoon in Chicago, and the Bears ended up getting a victory over the 49ers. 49ers are a team I had making the playoffs this year, but also a team who were really volatile, especially with first-year starter Trey Lance at the helm for them. Now, I'm going to give them a pass for this game because, A, it was monsooning. Like I mentioned, it was raining all over the place. There was an inch of rain on the field the entire game. Also, the 49ers were without George Kittle. They also lost starting running back Elijah Mitchell throughout this game with a knee injury. So I'd like to see Trey Lance in a little bit more of a controlled environment. Granted, he will have to win those games. But for your first start, not a first start, he started a couple games last year, but now he is the starter. And that, you know, his first game kind of in that role, I would have expected a little bit more. But granted, it was raining. It was tough to hold on to the ball. It was tough to pass the ball. He's already not the most accurate guy in general. So add the elements in there. It wasn't the best day. And we got to give credit to the Bears, though, because they looked good. Justin Fields looked really good. Looked good running the ball. They looked all right moving the ball. And they really turned it on late because San Francisco was really controlling this game. I don't want to make it seem like the Bears just dominated. The 49ers were really controlling this game, but they weren't really scoring. So when the Bears really got hot in the second half, I mean, they scored all 19 of their points in the second half. And San Francisco only had 3 points in the second half. So they really had some costly errors in the second half that allowed Chicago to come in and make a lot of plays. And it really helped them. And I'm really interested to see Justin Fields, the maturation of him as a quarterback, the new head coach in there, and how he really grows into that franchise quarterback role. All right, the next game, which was arguably one of the craziest games of the season so far. Granted, it's only week one, but how wild was it? Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. I mean, who would have thought Joe Burrow was going to turn the ball over 5 times? And who would have thought they would have missed? I mean, there was probably 3 or 4 game-winning kicks missed in this game. There was no weather to really cause any issues like there was in Chicago. But this was just a ridiculously crazy game. I mean, Ja'Marr Chase, stud, 10 catches, 129 yards, and a touchdown. Like I mentioned for Joe Burrow, he had 5 turnovers, which was uncharacteristic to say the least. But against the Steelers defense, you know, you're going to make some mistakes if you're not perfect with your ball placement and all the such. The big storyline, though, coming out of this game is TJ Watt. He came off the field late in the game, and he was grabbing on his left pec, and it almost seemed like he said he tore his pec when he was coming off the field. They're getting MRIs today, so by the time you're hearing this pod, you may even have updated news on the TJ Watt injury, but they really can't afford to lose him. And they do have a lot of really good players on the defensive side of the ball, but this is a guy who won Defensive Player of the Year last year. Like, this is a game-changing type of player, and we saw with their offense. Their offense, it was capped to a certain extent with Mitchell Trubisky. Also, Najee Harris ended up leaving this game with what people are fearing was a high ankle sprain, which are usually pretty tough. That's usually a multi-week kind of thing. So arguably, the Steelers lost 2 of their best players yesterday to injury. One for a substantial amount of time, it appears, and then one for a less substantial, but still more than likely going to miss at least a game. So, you know, this was a big win for them in general in the standings long term. But I do think that this probably said more about the Bengals' mistakes than it did about the Steelers, you know, really going all out and winning that game. I think they were pretty much handed it by the Cincinnati Bengals' ineptitude. All right, touching on some AFC East teams now. The Dolphins played the Patriots, and they just absolutely rolled them. I mean, the final score was only 20-7, so it was a close game pretty much throughout, but New England's offense is just not it right now. They have no dynamic weapons on the outside. Their offensive line seems in flux right now. Their offensive play calling seems in flux right now. And it's really, you know, it's just tough when you're trying to replace Josh McDaniels, one of the great offensive minds in the league, with guy Matt Patricia, who's a defensive coach. And then you got a guy in Mac Jones at the quarterback position who isn't really great off script. You know, he's a good quarterback, but unlike a guy like Jalen Hurts, who if a protection breaks down, Jalen Hurts can scramble out on a 3rd and 15 and pick up the first down. Mac Jones really isn't going to be doing that, so you can't rely on off script plays with Mac Jones. He also ended up leaving this game with a back injury, or I don't know if he ended up leaving. I didn't see exactly the end of the game, but they came out and said he had a back injury, said the game didn't even do media afterwards. I think he got an MRI on it today. So we'll see the news that kind of comes out throughout the week. However, if they lose Mac Jones, I mean, this team could free fall fast just with the lack of weapons. I mean, they're going to be in games because of their defense, and they even held Miami pretty good. I mean, Tua was 23 of 33 for 270 and a touchdown. Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle both looked really good. Miami's running game didn't look good at all. But then again, their passing game was pretty prolific. So bringing it back to New England's defense, if they're going to be able to stop the run, great. But are you going to be able to stop the pass? And if you can't stop the pass, are you going to be able to keep up on offense if the other team can score through the air? So I'm really nervous. This is the team I'm going to be watching closely week two, because if they don't show any kind of improvement right here, this could be a team that really free falls to the basement of the AFC East, where they haven't been for, it seems like, forever. All right, the next team from the AFC we're going to talk about is the Jets, who have been in that cellar for a long time. They ended up playing the Baltimore Ravens, a team that I'm very high on this year. I mentioned I'm really, really high on Lamar Jackson having that comeback revenge tour. It actually came out before the game that he turned down a $290 million contract with, I believe it was anywhere between $160 and $180 guaranteed dollars. Can't say that I agree with the decision. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money to be leaving on the table, especially for a guy like Lamar Jackson who likes to move outside the pocket. And all it really takes is one play to see that money go by the wayside. But, you know, I respect him for betting on himself. He thinks he's worth more. I think the big sticking point from him was he wanted a fully guaranteed contract like Deshaun Watson got. And, you know, there's been some agent surveys about the Deshaun Watson contract and how a lot of agents are angry and a lot of owners are angry about that contract, because now some players are going to hold out for that. And granted, you know, from their perspective, it's like, fine, you know, just hold out. We don't have to give you that money. Like, it's not like they have to, but you got a guy in Lamar Jackson who's won an MVP in this league and might win another MVP in this league and wins 60-70% of his games in the NFL. It's like, he should be worth that money, right? He should be worth a guaranteed contract. And from his perspective, I'm a running quarterback, I'm the whole offense, I feel like I deserve that. And I can't say I blame him from that part. But then again, $290 million, $180 million guaranteed, that's a tough one to pass on. So we'll see how that kind of goes throughout the season and how that storyline develops. But they, I mean, there really wasn't much to talk about during the game. They blew the brakes off the Jets. It was only 24-9, but it never was really close at all. And Lamar just absolutely dominated them again. All right, a couple other games we're going to get to here. The Colts ended up tying the Texans. There's a little bit of worry in Indy with this one, because they very well could have won this game. They didn't really have to push to overtime, but they did. They made a big-time comeback. They scored 17 points in the fourth quarter to even tie. But there is a lot to worry about here. I'm nervous. I mean, Jonathan Taylor absolutely dominated. He went 31 for 161 and a touchdown. Michael Pittman Jr. absolutely dominated. 9 catches for 121 yards and a touchdown. But their defense wasn't quite as well. Shaquille Leonard, formerly Darius Leonard, I changed his name, but middle linebacker for Indianapolis, was out for this game, which I think is a big reason why they were struggling to stop the Houston offense. So we'll keep an eye on his health, but I think with him coming back into the fold, that will kind of increase the effectiveness of their defense, and it should in turn hopefully lead to a little bit more wins. But still, tying with the Texans, not a good look, Chief. Couple other games we'll talk about here before we wrap it up. The Baker Bowl, the Browns ended up beating the Carolina Panthers in Carolina on a last-second field goal. That was a really good game, and, you know, Baker Mayfield didn't really look great. But then again, the Browns are the better team, and they should have won this game. So the fact that they did end up winning the game, I think, says more about the Browns roster in general, as opposed to, you know, a Baker Mayfield-led Cincinnati or Carolina team that really wasn't as explosive or didn't really have the defense to stop a Jacoby Brissett-led Browns team who just ran all over them. And, you know, once they got into red zone, were able to punch it in. All right, another game here, I'd be hearing it from my buddy Nick if I didn't talk about the New York Giants, who ended up winning over the Tennessee Titans in Tennessee on a last-second field goal miss by Tennessee. They ended up in the fourth quarter getting down into the red zone and scoring on a touchdown, going for two to take the lead as opposed to just kicking the PAT and tying it up. And they got it. Saquon Barkley punched it in, and it was a big-time moment for Brian Daboll in his first game at the helm for New York. Saquon Barkley absolutely dominated this game. He had 18 carries for 164 yards and a touchdown. So, dominant, return to dominance for Saquon Barkley. He was also very active in the passing game as well. And this is something I've been saying all preseason. I've been really in on Saquon. I thought as long as, you know, he stays healthy, he's going to give his team a chance to win a lot of the times because he's that explosive of a player. Daniel Jones really tried to lose the game for them. He threw a bad interception to the left pylon in the second half that Brian Daboll was chewing him out on the sideline for. And that's just my thing. Like, I want to congratulate the Giants on a big win, but at the same time, it's like, Daniel Jones is not going to be the answer. And you just see it already in week one. Like, you can just see already the mistakes. Even though they win, I'm already down on Tennessee. I've already said I don't think they're going to be good at all. I don't think they're going to finish in the top two of their own division. So the fact that they went in there and got a win, good. You know, it's their first opening game win since 2016 for the New York Giants. So progress with Brian Daboll. However, I'd love to see more out of Daniel Jones. And if not, you know, it might be time for Tyrod Taylor, because as the Giants showed in the game yesterday, the offensive line looked better. Saquon Barkley still looks elite. And, you know, the weapons, they looked all right yesterday. Kadarius Toney was explosive. Sterling Shepard called a bomb touchdown. And, you know, we'll see what happens kind of going forward with Brian Daboll and with that whole experiment. But at the end of the day, it comes down to Daniel Jones for me. All right, some games in the 425 window that I did want to touch on. The Chiefs absolutely blew the brakes off the Cardinals. It's worrying me a little bit that I had the Cardinals in the playoffs and they just absolutely got blown out in this game. They scored 14 points in the fourth quarter, did the Cardinals. However, that was already over by that point. Patrick Mahomes absolutely dominated without his guy in Tyreek Hill. I kind of have always been in the camp of, I think Tyreek Hill's really good, but I'll take Patrick Mahomes and I'll take Andy Reid over any singular wide receiver any day of the week. And they made everyone look good. They still have Travis Kelce. Clyde Edwards-Helaire looked great out of the backfield. And they seem like they've heard all the noise this offseason. They seem like they've heard it all and they're ready to really come at next this year. And we expected a high scoring game here. I expected the Cardinals to put up a little bit more of a fight. But at the end of the day, they could only muster 21, and 14 of that came in garbage time. All right, I did want to touch on the AFC West a little bit here. I just talked on, obviously, the Chiefs. But the other big game, the Chargers and the Raiders yesterday, was a phenomenal game. It ended up being 24-19 with the Chargers winning. Justin Herbert looked awesome. Justin Herbert looked absolutely like a beast. Was throwing touchdowns all over the place. They did lose Keenan Allen to a hamstring injury, so that is going to be something to monitor. But it did seem like they had a bunch of weapons. Javon Carter, I believe he was with the Texans. He's been on a bunch of different teams, but he caught two touchdowns yesterday. Josh Palmer, another receiver on that team, looked good. Mike Williams was pretty much invisible, but with the injury to Keenan Allen, I anticipate he's going to start to be a little bit more involved. And their running game was okay, but this was really all about Justin Herbert for the Los Angeles Chargers. He looked great. He led them down. He scored. They didn't really look great in the fourth quarter, but they scored enough throughout the game, and their defense stepped up enough. This was one move, as I kind of switched to the Chargers defense, that kind of went under the radar, I feel like, most of the offseason. they kind of traded for Khalil Mack out of nowhere, and nobody really, you know, it was big news when it broke, but I feel like we haven't really mentioned it that much. And what did he do? Go out, couple sacks, couple tackle for losses, you know, just totally disrupting everything that the Raiders wanted to do. And the fact that if he can play healthy and he can be that guy, I mean, this is a guy who a couple years ago was argued as one of the best defenders in the league, singular defenders in the league. So if they can get him back to form, it's just totally going to change the upside of this Chargers team and where they can go in the future. But overall from this game, this is pretty much how I expected it. I thought the Raiders would be pretty, you know, they would be able to contend in this game. You know, Davante Adams went 10 for 141 yards and a touchdown. You know, Derek Carr looked pretty good. He had 295 and two. But at the end of the day, Justin Herbert just made more plays, and the Chargers defense is a little bit better than the Raiders defense. And as you can see, they ended up getting away with the W. All right, the last game I wanted to talk about here now was the Sunday night game. The Buccaneers absolutely trounced the Dallas Cowboys, and it gives me so much pleasure in saying that. However, something that does not give me as much pleasure is Dak Prescott left the game with a hand injury. He got surgery today. He's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks. So that seriously hurts the Dallas Cowboys' chances in the NFC East and their playoff hopes in general. They did say Cooper Rush is going to be the starter for now. We'll see if they want to go out and they want to trade for Jimmy Garoppolo, or, you know, pick up Cam Newton, or trade for Gardner Minshew or something like that. You know, Jerry Jones doesn't really like to lose that much, so I could see him going out and maybe overspending for a guy in Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't think I see it, but I could see him making like a snap decision and saying we can't lose ground because, you know, the Birds look pretty good yesterday. The Giants won. The Commanders won. Like, NFC East is starting to pick up some wins. Obviously, it's only week one, but you can't get too far behind if you're the Cowboys, especially losing your star quarterback. They already lost Amari Cooper in the offseason. They lost a number of defenders in the offseason. So it's going to be interesting to see. And the other takeaway I have from this game is the Buccaneers really look good, actually. They ran the ball just down the throats of the Dallas Cowboys, and they didn't really have to score a ton. The scheme of their offensive line was really, really good. That was a big concern for me, was the offensive line of Tampa Bay. And it really didn't look like an issue. It didn't look like an issue at all. Leonard Fournette was able to run all over. He had 21 carries for 127 yards. You know, there goes the people who all said Leonard Fournette was fat and out of shape and probably wasn't going to get the job in the preseason, because he looked phenomenal. Brady looked great coming back from retirement at the age of 45. I'm never going to bet against Tom Brady. That's why I picked them to win the NFC South. And they looked great. They look great all together. They ended up winning by a score of 19-3. So not a very explosive games in terms of points, but a big game nonetheless for Tampa Bay to continue to, you know, stay in the lead for the NFC South. Obviously, with the Saints winning, they're keeping pace with them at least to start the year. All right, guys, that is going to wrap up the show today. Please hit that subscribe button again if you're on YouTube. Please follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you're listening. Would really mean a lot. Check the handle in the descriptions for our social media accounts. And we will see you guys next time. Thanks for tuning in. For Noah Gillian, signing out.